Curlew in Autumn, a thriller serial for radio in 6 episodes by Edward Boyd, with David Ashton as Peter Kalman. Episode 2. Peter Kalman, a small-town lawyer in Galloway, is having problems with his career, with his unsympathetic bank manager, and with his ex-girlfriend, Jenny. She has taken up the cause of Tim Layton, an old hermit who's been put in a local private hospital against his will. The hospital, in turn, has denied all knowledge of Layton's existence. Then a cryptic message on a telephone answering machine takes Peter Kalman to a meeting with a young nurse.
Shock is a kind of mental blast, and just as unpredictable. All that went through my mind when I heard about Morag Nicholson was an old Cole Porter tune. It was called Miss Otis Regrets. Round and round it went in my head, fragmented, bits of it appropriate, bits of it totally absurd. And all the time the bovine face of Constable Archie Douglas, hanging in the outside darkness, like a bull looking over a black hedge.
Are you all right, Mr. Kalman?
What happened to her?
She was knocked down and killed by a hit-and-run driver.
Any idea when it happened?
We're still working on that.
There's nothing I can do, is there?
Don't think so, Mr. Kalman.
I'll say goodnight, then.
Good night, Mr. Kalman.
The house is called Pisgah, after the hill that Moses stood on to view the Promised Land. Though what Promised Land my great-grandfather had in mind when he built it, with his own hands and out of the local stone, has never been divulged. I should have sold it long ago and bought a bijou residence with central heating and wall-to-wall domestic computers. Most of my acquaintances had already done this, although they called the computers wives. The house was cold and smelt of damp, ancient mice and things mouldering in attics. Generations of dead toys, furniture with incurable wounds, piles of magazines tied together with hairy twine, old, faded curtains bled of colour. Suddenly I was sick of the house and everything in it, including myself. I didn't know I'd been asleep until I was awakened by the front door bell.
Sorry to call so late, Peter.
What time is it anyway?
Oh, it's just about 12.
Come in.
I saw your light was still on.
Aye, I fell asleep sitting on the sofa.
Ah, well, that's what sofas are for, eh?
His name was Dunsmore. Isaiah Dunsmore. And with a name like that, and the kind of parents who would give a child a name like that, you can imagine his school days. His father had alternated between bouts of burning bush evangelism and spectacular drinking bouts. Yet he himself had emerged from this unscathed, a man of integrity, no respecter of persons, fiercely independent, as honest as daylight, which might explain to the cynical why he was still only a sergeant in the police force. I took him into the sitting room, and he stood, looking round it, as though making an inventory.
This room hasn't changed in 25 years.
Old Hansford said much the same thing about the office. He took it as a mark of respect for my uncle.
More likely a sign that you're fed up with both places, eh?
You could be right.
I'd like to ask you something.
Go ahead.
What were you doing sitting in your car outside the picture house tonight?
Did Archie Douglas not tell you?
Well, I'd like to hear it for you.
I was waiting for a girl.
Morag Nicholson?
I don't know.
Come on, Peter.
It's the truth.
Can't accept that.
No, I don't blame you.
Listen, just stick to the point, Peter.
All right. Here it is. I received a mysterious message from a mysterious lady. She gave me no name, but she said she needed my advice. And then she said she was coming to the cinema that night.
So you went along just out of curiosity?
Oh, maybe I was touting for business.
There has to be more, Peter.
Aye, well, maybe there is. Come along to the office in the morning. I'll let you hear the message.
Right, I'll be there.
In the meantime, you...
No. I've a few shop doors to rattle. Good night.
Good night.
By the way, Peter.
Yes?
Did you know Morag Nicholson was pregnant?
I hadn't known about Morag Nicholson, but the knowledge of her interesting condition did not make sleep any easier. But the night dragged past and let the morning blunder in, and by 10:30 I pronounced myself fit enough to climb the stairs into my office. Isaiah Dunsmore was already in residence, disgustingly fit and bright, and everything I was not, and couldn't remember ever having been.
Good morning, Peter.
I don't think so.
Oh, I think you need some coffee.
The electric kettle's not working.
I fixed it.
Coffee jar's empty.
I went out and I bought a fresh one.
No further objections, my lord.
Oh, how many sugars?
Two.
A lady phoned, by the way.
Oh, no, not another one.
Certain Magda von Schellenberg. I wrote it down.
You should come and work for me.
I don't think you could afford me.
I can't even afford to reimburse you for the coffee you bought.
Reimburse? There's a fine legal word. Are you really as broke as people say you are?
Is that what you hear?
A quiet but persistent rumour, Peter. Two sugars, you say?
What did La Schellenberg want?
She wanted to know if it was possible for her helicopter to land in the main street.
Thank you. You're joking.
Not me, sir.
Did you tell her the A-75 was specially designed for choppers?
I just told her I had no authority to grant the request. Tundor Snooty on me demanded to be put in touch with somebody who had. I gave her the provost's home number.
You're a daft bugger.
I need a real snooty number, though. Is she?
I've never seen her.
Good God, Peter, your life seems to be littered with invisible women.
Now, if they're invisible, how would I know?
Now then, that was a weird message in your answering machine.
Did you understand it?
I've got this friend in Glasgow. He's in charge of 200 computers. Calls them all Jimmy.
What has that to do with the message?
Well, you see, he comes from Benbecula.
Oh, Gaelic speaking.
Correct.
I got Donald MacLeod to do my translating.
Mm-hmm. That maybe wasn't the smartest thing he ever did.
On that cryptic note, he left. And I went through my mail, which was totally devoid of excitement, and that was all I asked of the GPO nowadays. And then the telephone rang, and it was young Elphinstone from the bank, who was destined for greater things, his father being provost.
Mr. Anderson asked me to call you.
Is that young Elphinstone?
It is, Mr. Calman.
And what is a fine young wing forward like you doing in that whorehouse?
Pining.
I take it from this conversation that Piggy Anderson is out of the office.
He's at the market.
Piggy takes that nursery rhyme too seriously.
He said I was to return your checkbook and credit card.
I don't believe it.
I could send one of the girls up with it.
None of them is pretty enough.
True. Depressingly true.
I'll drop by at the bank later on.
Right. Talk to you later.
Once upon a time, when ritual still meant something, they would parade you in front of the regiment, strip you of your epaulets while some military muscle queen broke your sword over his knee. Nowadays they take away your credit card. Yesterday as disgraced as Dreyfus, today reinstated with full military honours. What was Piggy up to? And what did he know that I didn't? It is one of time's tyrannies to hold the monopoly of answers to questions like that. I think it was Dean Swift who said that suspense was the life of a spider. I think I agree with him without ever having given the matter too much thought. I've never been very good at sitting around waiting for things to happen. Maybe that's because my birth sign is Aries, a dangerous sign to have around a cattle market. So, I went to the newsagents instead, and browsed through the paperbacks, and listened to Donald MacLeod.
You got a body swerve last night.
Did I?
I saw you there waiting, outside the cinema.
Yes, there's a name for folk like you.
Nasty business about that nurse, wasn't it? Morag Nicholson.
Yes.
Was it her you were waiting for?
I don't know any nurses.
And you that long time in hospital?
That was a long time ago.
Is it true she was, in the club?
You'd better ask Sergeant Dunsmore about that.
Dunsmore was right. It had been a mistake getting MacLeod to translate the Gaelic message on the answering machine. MacLeod was a town crier, garrulous, gossipy, a mathematician of the mouth who could take two and two and twist it into five. Primitives believe that it is impossible for a man and a woman to be alone together without, you'll pardon the expression, intercourse taking place. Now a scenario was being dreamed up in which I could impregnate a lady simply by hearing her voice, a development that could foreshadow the end of sex as we know it, and make every woman who picked up a telephone a call girl. As I walked down the main street in the diesel-flavoured autumn, I was sick of my small town and its antinomian smugness. Then I saw the car that was parked in the street outside my office. It was a kind of car you moored rather than parked, and the girl who awaited me in my office matched it in every expensive detail. Like it, she was a beautiful and magnificent artifact.
I'm Magda von Schellenberg.
Ah, you're the lady who phones in the middle of the night.
And you are the man who answered so rudely.
Yes, yes. Please sit down. I'm sorry if I upset you.
Oh, you Scotch men all like that.
Like what?
Honest and forthright and brave.
Oh, I'm afraid that's propaganda for the tourists.
Oh, you're telling me that such is not the case?
Not in my experience, no.
What is your experience?
That they are devious, treacherous and cowardly.
Does that apply to you too?
Who am I to say it doesn't?
Would it have applied to your uncle?
My uncle was a very special person. You can't tie down what he was to any single nation. You can only hope that there are and always will be people like him all over the world.
That is a very beautiful thing to have said about him. I wish you to buy, on my behalf, a house.
Have you somewhere specific in mind?
Yes. Well, the place I am after is called Knockdoor Cottage.
Mm. How much are you prepared to pay for it?
Up to £1,000,000.
For that money, you could probably get the Taj Mahal.
Let's talk about it over lunch.
The Crockett Arms was filled with its usual clientele. Cattle buyers from all over. Fertilizer salesmen, men in thick tweeds with even thicker accents. Men who travelled the country peddling poison in the name of productivity. Men with expense account faces smelling of tractor dung. A smattering of local worthies, the editor of the local rag. Old Hansford, whose boast it was that he had ordered the same food every lunchtime for 62 years. Every day, broth, roast beef and Yorkshire pudding, and apple crumble. Every day except Sundays. Sundays, he had lunch at home. Broth and roast beef and Yorkshire pudding and apple crumble. He stared at my companion as we walked into the dining room, and his faded blue eyes almost lit up with a flicker of elderly lust. And he murmured something to the man on his right, Piggy Anderson, my friendly neighbourhood bank manager. A tomb-like silence descended on the room. It came from a kind of social fear. The Crockett Arms had seen nothing like Magda von Schellenberg since the 1880s, when Queen Victoria had been snowbound there on her way north.
Why is everything so quiet?
I think it's a kind of tribute to you.
Have all Scotchmen got false teeth?
Above a certain age, yes. Well, would you care to tell me what you have in mind?
A temple of peace.
And this cottage you want me to purchase has something to do with it?
Yes.
I see.
My dear Peter Calman, you do not see at all.
No, you're absolutely right.
This cottage, Noctor Cottage as it's called, will be the Temple of Peace.
We're not talking here about some weird sect, are we?
We are talking about two fine men now dead who were caught in a terrible war.
Am I allowed to ask who they were?
One of them was my father.
And the other?
The other was my godfather. You are suspicious.
Only about one thing.
Tell me about that one thing.
Why me?
Are you suggesting I should have gone to that old man at the next table? The one who keeps on dressing me with his eyes. I think his name is Hansford.
How did you know that?
Oh, I have dossiers on everyone of importance in this town.
I hope you're only joking.
Look, I have to be back in New York tomorrow, and I have things to do before then. You know what I want you to do. If you talk to your bank manager, he'll tell you what financial arrangements have been made.
It's just one more question.
Yes?
Who was your godfather?
His name was the same as yours.
My father?
Your uncle.
Now, she had talked about, or rather mentioned, two fine dead men who were caught in a terrible war. One of them was my uncle, and I knew him for a fine man. And I also knew for a fact that he had never been in the forces, and I knew for another fact that he had never been out of Scotland in his life. So where had these fine dead men met, and what had been the circumstances of their meeting? I escorted her to a car, and we said goodbye, and the car glided away like Cleopatra's barge, only bigger. Then I strolled down to the bank, and the staff all stopped whatever they were doing and stared at me, and it was a kind of genuflection.
Come in, Peter. Come in. Come in.
Thank you. Did you have a good lunch?
Interesting, Peter. Interesting.
I believe some money may have been paid into my account.
That's right, Peter.
How much?
£1 million.
You think she's good for it?
Well, she's vouched for by the Banque Populaire Suisse.
And who are they?
One of the most powerful banking empires in Europe.
The things you know. Any strings attached to this donation?
Well, not as far as I know. You may, of course, have some private arrangement.
We may indeed.
I collected my checkbook and my born-again credit card and walked out into the afternoon street, a man who had a private arrangement with a lady called Magda von Schellenberg, even if, at the moment, that arrangement could be described as unilateral. It was as much to adjust this balance as anything else that took me to the office of old man Hansford. He was seated in a deep leather armchair that looked as ancient as he was. His office was as bare as a bone, bleak, except for one searing patch of colour, a bunch of magnificent yellow chrysanthemums. He was famous for growing them, and their glorious hue was a shout of joy in the sombre parsimony of that room.
Dung. That's the secret, Peter. Good, honest dung. Plenty of it.
So much for the wonders of modern science.
Aye, you're right there. Whilst I sit here in this office and watch all these cars rattling by to Dumfries and Rar, I think to myself, they're all right as far as they go.
But no dung.
Aye. I was just about to phone you, Peter.
I've saved you the trouble.
Aye. That was a braw bit of stuff you were wee at lunchtime.
She noticed you lecturing at her.
I'll no deny that's just what I was doing. Mm. But I'm sure you'll forgive me, Peter. I'm only 82.
You were going to phone me.
How would you fancy joining the firm?
I've got a firm of my own.
I'm suggesting a merger.
Oh, I'll have to think it over.
Didn't take too long. It makes sense, you can.
For you or for me?
Me.
Well, at least you're frank.
You know why?
Could it be you've heard a whisper I've come into money?
Well, maybe that's no altogether irrelevant. But there's more to it than that.
Break the habit of a lifetime, Mr. Hansford. Let's have the whole truth.
You're laughing at me.
Mr. Hansford.
Right, Peter, laugh away. But mind this, son, the last laugh is aye the best laugh.
That sounds rather ominous.
I'm saying name here.
Well, if you can't take a joke.
What can I do for you, Mr. Calman?
Well, if you're going
to
be
come to the point, Mr. Calman.
Very well. I believe you act as agent for a property called Nocturne Cottage.
Nocturne?
I'd like to have a look at it with a view to purchasing it.
You want to buy Nocturne?
May I have the key, please?
Oh, aye, you can have the key. Most certainly, you can have the key to Nocturne.
When people who are humourless suddenly start laughing, 5 gets you 10. That all is not well. This thought carried me downstairs and into the street. It was succeeded by another thought. Hansford had given me the key to Nocturne, but his laughter suggested there was another and different key that he kept in his head. I got back to my office and... chaos. Everything that could be smashed was smashed. Files had been pulled out and their contents carpeted the floor. My answering machine would never answer anyone again, and my telephone had been ripped out. It was clearly a case for Sergeant Dunsmore.
Another protest against the system?
How did I get on the mailing list?
I could make a rough guess.
Couldn't be any rougher than what's happened here.
Oh, it could, Peter.
Well... in that case, I'd like to hear your rough guess.
Small towns are funny places.
I wish I'd said that.
To begin with, they're boring. Nothing ever happens in them. They lack drama. So they have a habit of making it up out of any ingredients they may have.
I don't see myself anywhere in this yet.
Now don't switch over to a different channel.
Get on with it then.
Once upon a time, there was a poor but honest nurse. One day she met a handsome young man and fell madly in love with him. And in the fullness of time, discovered she was about to become a single parent.
I don't think I like this story.
In the meantime, the young man had met a rich and beautiful lady. That meant that as far as the young man was concerned, the poor but honest nurse was already into injury time. And one night, he drove out in his chariot and knocked her down.
Is that what they're saying?
Give or take a little.
Bastards.
Oh, agreed, agreed. But in the meantime, just remember what we used to shout at the film matinees when we were kids.
What was that?
Mind your back.
Once I saw an old movie at the local film society. I remember a killer was tracked down when a beggar chalked the letter M on his coat. I could imagine now the feelings of that hunted man. I could imagine the locals looking at me and seeing the invisible M on my coat, and for some it meant murderer, and for others, millionaire. I left the office to take care of itself and found my car and drove out of this censorious, sanctimonious, voyeuristic little town. I was dulling myself by doing so, and that therapy took me in the direction of Nocturne Cottage, and whatever might await me there.
In episode 2 of Curlew in Autumn by Edward Boyd, Peter Calman was played by David Ashton. Isaiah Dunsmore was played by Gregor Fisher. Magda von Schellenberg by Vivian Dixon. Old Hansford by Ian Stewart. Piggy Anderson and Donald MacLeod by John Buick. Constable Archie Douglas and Young Elphinstone by Robert Patterson. Curlew in Autumn was directed in our Edinburgh studios by Patrick Rayner.